Doing the Hot Lava Podcast, Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. With me, Ryan Finley, or I'm with him. Ryan Finley, my boss, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres salvaged a series against the Giants over the weekend by crushing them on Sunday. Now, Mike Schilt's former team, the Cardinals, come to town. Padres' third series of the season, even though it sort of feels like the second series. And, you know, but we're just getting going. Padres are 3-3. I got some things, but Ryan, as always, where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with just a quick recap of the Giants. I thought that they looked great twice, and they looked terrible twice. You know, I thought opening day was sort of the blueprint for how this team will have to win games if they want to make the playoffs. I thought Friday and Saturday were kind of messes. And then, you know, Sunday, boom, boom, boom. Well, it's 12-0 through three. Is there anything we can take away from these first four games?
You know, it's interesting you say that. Yeah, you know, usually I'm the guy that's going to push back. And I'm not saying it's what you were saying, you know, like they have to win games this way. Or, hey, they were a mess, so that showed these huge problems. But I did write about a couple things that, you know, they weren't tight on Friday and in particular on Saturday. And that's something that they've talked about and that they've stressed. And I absolutely believe they have a team that can pull off victories like yesterday where it was 12-0 after three innings. I absolutely believe they could do that. But that's not going to happen all the time. And they are the ones that, and to their credit, that talked about having, you know, winning on the margins so that when they don't score 12 runs or six runs, even, you know, that's the difference. And it is the difference between, say, I don't know, 82 wins and 85, you know, which could make a difference some years between not making the playoffs and be disastrously disappointing and then making the playoffs. I can't think of a year like that, but that's what they've talked about. And it was what they did against the Dodgers for the most part. You know, I'd even say both games, even the one they lost. And then they did against the Giants on Thursday. And you thought, okay, cool. You know what? Because that's the way that they wanted to start. And that's the way they're starting. And, you know, then they come back yesterday. And I sort of laughed. I don't know how many of you, you know, read the story or heard Mike Schilt's comments. You know, they had given up on Saturday night's game. They were down 9-1. And when I say given up, you know, it's just the smart thing that baseball teams do when you're losing by eight runs or whatever, going into the last inning or so, you start substituting, right? And so that means you're not necessarily expecting to come back. Well, then they score five runs in the bottom of the ninth, two home runs, one by Eggy Rosario, a sub, one by Graham Pauly, his first career hit, a sub. And Mike points out very passionately that, you know, this shows what kind of team they are. Okay. Except you'd given up. But that, neither here nor there. Guess what? They come out of the gates and score five runs in the first inning the next day, four runs in the second inning. So, like, good on you, Mike Schilt. Good on you, Padres. And by the way, outside of Mexico City, I think it took something like 47, 48 games to get an inning with more than three runs. And they've done it six times already this season through six games. So this is a different kind of offense.
Well, and that's exactly where I was going to go next, Kevin. We talked so much about the margins, right? We talked so much about the way Mike Schilt has said they're going to have to win games that I think we forget sometimes that this is an offense that can bludgeon some people. I mean, you look at the runs that they scored game two in Korea. You look at what they did Sunday, even a little bit in Thursday's opener against the Giants, you know, they can stack hits on top of hits. And that's because it seems like when they get production, they're getting it from everybody top to bottom. Luis Campusano, Kevin, I mean, this is more of what we saw last year. Tell me what you think of him so far.
You know what? There were kind of a signs last year. Here's a guy who I've lost track now, but I'm going to be very close here. It's 20 or 21 multi-hit games in what I believe is now 68 career starts. Not saying this is a pace he's going to keep up for the rest of his career, but the kid's 25 years old. I'll be writing about it this week. He's just coming into who he is and who many in the Padres organization at the top thought that he was, and that he maybe wasn't. Well, he had injuries. He didn't play very well in some spurts, and he wasn't given a chance by. And I'm not, I'm going to be very sensitive going forward, kind of talking about Bob Melvin and not trying to blame everything on him. But let's just say that a former catcher held catchers to a very high standard, and also, you know, favored veterans. And so, you know, Luis Cabezano is being allowed to come out of his shell. He has worked really hard. I know we say that about everybody who does well, but he has worked really hard. And again, good on him. I guess that's my saying for the day. Good on Luis Campusano. You know, did I mention already? Changed up his stance a little bit, but really, really was hitting pretty well at the end of last year as well.
His hands are a little bit sort of in. I don't know. My amateur thing, it looks like he's doing something a little bit different with his hands.
It maybe looks that way because of the timing mechanism that has to do with leg kick is changed things up a little bit. It's the kind of thing that you and I have to look at, you know, 5 or 6 times to go, oh, okay. Yeah. I see it. Yeah. And you know, these guys are talking about all the time, like they see this little fraction of an inch kind of thing. This is actually a pretty pronounced change with his leg kick. But, you know, I think, like I said, whenever a guy's doing well or whatever, we go, oh yeah, look at that. And it's actually something Jeff Sanders and I were talking about during the spring too, is, oh, okay, there's something new here. We'll see. I err on the side of not going too crazy about new pitches, new batting stances in spring, because everybody's got them, right?
Right.
Armpits and things. Everyone's got them. And let's wait and see how they work. Well, I think it's time to mention that Luis kept, make a little bit of a deal out of this. But like I said, I think that they thought this kid was a good hitter all along, and he was showing signs last year.
Right. How many good hitting catchers are there in baseball, Kevin?
Golly. You know what?
3, 4? Yeah.
Until Ethan Salas gets here and, you know, breaks records and is Johnny Bench. Again, 2, great point. And then another point, how many regular catchers are there younger than 25? It just doesn't happen. But because Luis Camposano was number 2 prospect, we get kind of crazy about prospects. He came up, he had a home run this first game, you know, then was injured. There was a lot of talk, both good and bad, about the guy. Just a lot of talk is my point. And it's like, we kind of lost track of the fact he was 21. Mm-hmm. And we lost track of the fact he was 22. We lost track of the fact he was 23. Like, you know, the guy just hadn't caught a lot. And now he has. And not only not caught a lot, but been to the plate in the major leagues a lot. Really, hadn't been to the plate much in the minor leagues a lot. So the guy is just coming into his own.
You said that he's allowed to kind of be himself now. Is that just something that comes with being older?
He's actually like more like allowed to play now.
Okay, gotcha.
If you remember 2022, it was like, right. Where's Campusano? And there are reasons, and I'm not ripping on anyone. I'm saying the reality is Luis Campusano is the regular catcher now. So he's being allowed to, play.
Play every day. Yeah. Another guy who hasn't had a ton of minor league at bats, but found himself in the big leagues this weekend was Graham Pauly. A rocket of a home run off the right field foul pole during that 9th inning on Saturday. Was back in the lineup on Sunday because I think that that's what you do when a guy homers in his first big league at bat. What have we seen from him? And there's been a lot of chatter, Kevin, about what his role should be. I'm staying out of it, but what do you anticipate his role being going forward?
Well, that's brave of you, Ryan. Let me stay in here. Yes, that is what happened. You do get a start after a home run when also the opposing pitcher is a right-hander.
Your closer, Camilo Duvall. Yeah.
No, when the opposing pitcher the next day is a right-hander is what I'm saying is that. Yeah. But yes, good point. Maybe hit the home run off Camilo Duvall. Now, you know, Camilo Duvall, he's in there probably to get work, you know, because they're up by 6 at that point. But anyway, yes. And so it will still be a platoon. To your point / question / tap dance where you're not going to touch it as to why Graham Pauly wasn't playing. Well, let's first of all look at Tyler Wade's played a lot in this league as a utility man. Tyler Wade's getting on base at a 400 clip. So it's not like the guy that's been in there hasn't been doing the job. Graham Pauly had played how many? 0 games above double A. Not that many at double A, by the way. And all along, they felt that one of the things about Graham Pauly was that he would be able to come up. I think a lot of folks, be that media, be that in the game, be that fans, prospect comes up, he has to play. Padres are pretty upfront. You know, that's true about Jackson Merrill. That's true about when they bring up Ethan Salas, okay? Right. And it is generally true. You know, Graham Pauly, that doesn't have to be true about him. And they were upfront about it. Won't be true about him. Also, fairly upfront. Not really, but you can read between the lines and talk to people behind the scenes. he's not long for the major leagues. Now, Graham Pauly can change that. Graham Pauly can change that by hitting a couple more bombs, and then maybe Tyler Wade isn't long for the major leagues this go around. But the plan was Graham Pauly's here because they need him here, and just like the same reason they need Tyler Wade or Graham Pauly or Eggy Rosario to start at third base, because Manny Machado's a designated hitter right now. Probably, you know, at least for two more weeks, maybe through this month. Heck, there's no guarantee, maybe for the season. Don't focus on that, folks. I'm just saying, you know, we don't know when he's coming back. But Graham Pauly was, this was the plan for him, and not every guy. Now, is it a general rule? Yes. You bring up a guy, you cost him minor league at bats, you know, development. He's going to start in the majors. That was not what was sold to Graham Pauly. They never said that was true about Graham Pauly. And by the way, the AAA season just started on Friday and the AA season hasn't started. So what's Graham Pauly missing? Not much. What's he gaining? Holy crap. He's around Manny Machado. He's around Xander Bogaerts. He's around Alan Craig. He's around AJ Ellis. He's around major league coaching. He gets to participate in pregame. He gets to see what a major league ball game looks like. Do I think that Graham Pauly should be here, or do the Padres think that Graham Pauly should be here all year and barely play? Probably not. But what's the goal here? It's a dual goal, of course. But is the goal here Graham Pauly's development? Yes. Is the bigger goal here to have the players here to help the Padres win in 2024?
Fact remains, they need a left-handed bat off the bench, Kevin. And he's left-handed. And if he continues to hit, that's the role. And it is funny, and I don't know if this is a Mike Schilt-related thing or not, but when they talk about winning on the margins, when he's managing game three of the season by putting a pinch runner in at third base in the fifth inning, by pulling Yu Darvish for Tom Cosgrove when Darvish has thrown 70 some odd pitches, you do get the feeling that, how do I say this? That they're trying to squeeze every advantage out of every situation. And if that means that Graham Pauly has to be a pinch hitter, then that means Graham Pauly has to be a pinch hitter, right?
Here's the crazy thing. And yes, I see how it can be interpreted as manipulating. And I've tried to break that down for people right, when it comes to AJ Preller and what gets said about him and all that. Like, you know that a lot of people, like the A's, don't believe the manager makes a hill of beans difference. Mm-hmm. AJ Preller does. Mm-hmm. He doesn't tell the manager what to do, but he's disappointed when the manager doesn't do some things, because that's his job. Like, you would be disappointed in me if I did it. Now, you're not saying, Kevin, generally, as a general rule, Kevin, go out and do this. You might say to me, hey, Kevin, when you think about this, Like that's kind of the working relationship. And so I wanted to start there, in that's the manager Mike Schilt is, and the manager that AJ Preller wants, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know that every time Mike is going to pinch run, like your great point by you, puts Jose Azokar in at third, when it's not like, Jurickson Profar has lead or a cement feet. But he thought that maybe, just maybe, on a sacrifice ball to medium, a potential sacrifice fly into medium left field, that Jose Azokar's speed could make a difference over Jurickson Profar's speed. And then they also have upgraded slightly defensively.
Defensively.
So why not make the move? That's what Mike Schilt is doing. And yeah, as I put it, Mike Schilt manages.
Yeah.
That's what he does. He does not sit back and wait. I'm not saying Bob Melvin or Jace Tingler or Andy Green or other, but without a doubt, Mike Schilt manages.
Yes. I will be curious.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Because I think you might want to interpret that as me like praising him. I am neither praising nor I'm pointing out, because guess what? If things don't go well, that can wear on a team. Mm-hmm. Okay. So like, let's just watch it. That's all. That's why I pointed out. Why you pointed out, let's just watch it. Like, that could be the difference in five or six games this season. Mm-hmm. Or it could be the difference in, you know, them at the end of the season being worn out, because like they were at this, they knew their manager was at, and they were at this high level of urgency all year. Mm-hmm. And so let's just see how it plays out.
Right. You know, a manager who manages, you know, I think of Bruce Bochy, who played the percentages all the time. But you know what? He didn't play the percentages more than anybody else in baseball. He just happened to, he was right more often than the others, right? And so when you're lifting Jurickson Profar, for Jose Azokar, there's also a real chance that could blow up in your face, right? That the game, that it's the ninth inning and the tying runs on third and the winning runs on second, and look who's coming up, and it's Jose Azokar, right?
You know, you're out of pinch hitters because you also had to then, because of your situation at third base, you made a change there. And yes, without a doubt. Now, Mike Shildt is aware of that and all that. But yes, he decided to pull the trigger there. He was sure to say when asked about it after the game that he won't do it all the time. And so, yeah.
It's interesting, Kevin. You're starting to learn him a little bit and learn his strategies and his philosophies. Has anything jumped out at you after the first, 2 months and six games that matter?
That. Also that he's a company man. He's very aware who his boss is. And he believes in that. He believes in that, you know, things stay in-house. He believes that you support your players, even when sometimes it's like, did you really need to, like, support the guy right there? Could we have allowed that? Hey, this was a learning moment. Mike's default is say, I was fine with that. I was good with that aggression. Okay. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Oh, to the player. And the player says, yeah, I made a mistake there. Which I already knew, but that's Mike. And gosh, darn it. I'll tell you what, it's worked. Like baseball players, no matter what they say, like, oh, we got our manager. You know what? Same guy who said that about the previous manager. Okay. They don't really care. I mean, generally speaking, baseball is the most difficult game, mental/physical/grind on your psyche. Players have to be self-centered and worry about what they're doing. But let me tell you something. Mike Shildt is so genuine, so supportive, so intentional about making you, the player, understand that he cares about you and has your back and that you're in this together, that I believe early on that has broken through to a lot of these guys. I really do. I think that, and let's just keep an eye on that. I believe that it has broken through and that these guys have bought into to Mike Shildt's way.
Mike Shildt, I'm sure, will tell you that, three-game series with the St. Louis Cardinals that begins Monday night doesn't matter, that it's just another game, that he's all Padres all the time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Kevin, is there a thought that this may matter to him? I mean, this has to be a full circle moment for a guy who, you know, may not have believed he was ever going to manage again.
Yes, I believe. I want to first off say that if and when he talks about how it doesn't really matter, whatever the words he uses to sort of soften it, I think he can be believed to some extent in that he knows that, you know, this is the new team and it's three games, blah, blah. However, if he doesn't acknowledge it, he is full of garbage. And I don't think I'm betraying anything there by any sort of, I've spent a lot of time with Mike. I don't think I'm betraying anything there. I think you could read some quotes that he's had about the hurt over the last couple of years while he was kind of in that purgatory. And you could understand that it is very important to him. It was a very traumatic thing. Let's try to remember here. He almost got them to the playoffs after taking over midseason in 18. I think it was a last place to second place jump. He made the playoffs, including the NLCS in 2019, but then he goes on to make the playoffs in 20 and 21, is fired after a 90-win season after they'd won, was it 17 in a row near the end of the season. That was not a team that was loaded per se. Good players, decent pitching, real good defense, real good base running. And I'm assuming, obviously I didn't watch the Cardinals nearly as close as I, you know, watched the Padres, but I'm assuming a guy who managed, you know, as he manages now. So, it's going to be important to Mike.
That's cool. Kevin, I don't necessarily need to get into all three pitching matchups, but I'm especially fascinated by Monday nights, by tonight. You've got Kyle Gibson making his Cardinals debut after signing with them away from Baltimore, going up against Matt Waldron, a guy who we've written about him, we've talked about him, but I think it bears repeating. This is a guy who was a throw-in in the Mike Clevenger trade, right? And has messed around with a knuckleball and has it, but he doesn't throw it all the time. And he can also throw a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. I'm not sure there's a more interesting pitcher in the Padres rotation, at least, than Matt Waldron. And it looks like he's going to get the first shot as their number five starter this year.
Yeah, it's a real bonus for us, huh? The number five pitcher is like usually a guy you're like, all right, number one's next. Right. You know, see what they can do tonight. Matt Waldron is fun to watch. It is fun that his, based on spring training and based on things that were said about spring training, the knuckleball usage will be up. I was impressed with how, and they were, more importantly, whenever I say I was, you know, who cares? But how he used it, when he used it, it makes that 90-mile-an-hour fastball better. That said, that fastball and the way that he was commanding that, and duh, this is for everybody, but when you got that knuckleball in the pocket and your fastball is making people think and they're always thinking about the knuckleball, that can be a great combination. It really worked for him in spring. Here's the caution I have, and I think that there was no doubt. If it was a competition, Matt Waldron ran away with that competition in the spring. Kudos, and I think this guy can be a like magnificent number five starter. See, now that's a relative thing, right? Magnificent number five starter. Heck, I'm not saying that that's his limit. I'm just saying he can be really good for the Padres in this role. Spring training, where it can fool you the most, when you've got a guy trying to make the team, facing not only minor leaguers, but major league hitters who are trying to work on stuff. Like spring training can fool you in these situations. And Matt Waldron was trying to make this team. Hey, guess what? Johnny Brito was trying to make the rotation. Pedro Avila was trying to make the rotation. And they did not pitch as well as Matt Waldron.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I'm curious, too, with a couple of things. It's been so long since the Padres have had a knuckleball pitcher, somebody who at least throws one sometimes.
It'll be about 30% is my guess. That'll be up a good 5 to 10% per outing.
Right. You would have to think that if you're a guy who throws a knuckleball, you like being back in San Diego with humidity, with the dense air, pitching at night, pitching at Petco, right? Wouldn't a knuckleball suffer like curveballs suffer from elevation and dryness like we see in Phoenix?
Maybe he would be pitching in Colorado. Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it can still work and you just got to be a little bit better, right? Like Blake Snell's stuff, he hated pitching in Colorado. It can affect anybody. But yes, it'll be interesting. Got four games there. Now, they have off days. It's a very interesting schedule. They can skip Matt Waldron sometimes. They can line up to face the Dodgers a certain way. They can line up to face the Braves a certain way, given the off days that they have coming up. Would they also try to work around Colorado? You know, they did that. They've done that for countless pitchers when Chris Paddock was young. They've done that before. So, we'll see.
I think the last Padre to throw a knuckleball was Charlie Hager. That's my bonus thing for the day. That's all I got. I can't tell you what I had for dinner last night, Kevin.
You're unbelievable.
I think it was Charlie Hager. Hey, real quick before we go, I know you were off yesterday for Easter. Give me an Easter candy review. Your favorites, or tell me you allowed yourself a piece or two at least.
I did. I was pretty disgusted with myself. And listen, folks, I'm not being a food snob or anything like that. It's that my life goes in cycles where in the off season, I am fantastic. Like I eat very, very well. Mostly through spring training, early into the season. I try to wait beyond March 31st to have 5 Rice Krispie treats, which is what I did yesterday. And grandpa never says no. So as my granddaughter's having marshmallows and candy, you know, taking a little bit with not taking, she's a very polite young lady, offering me these things at 8 a.m. And I'm nibbling on them. Real disappointed in myself, but, my wife does a fantastic job. Always take Easter off. I was actually kind of selfishly, I told Schilt this, I was rooting for a rainout. I didn't want to miss the game and I missed a good one. But I enjoyed my day.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, Padres, Cardinals, 3-game series before Padres then hit the road for their first real true road trip of the year. So 640, 640, 110 over the next 3 nights. We'll see how they match up against Mike Schilt's former team. That'll do it here for the Hot Lava podcast. For Kevin Hayes, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.